November 11th, we'll go ahead and call the Port Commission of the Port of Houston Authority to order. Okay, just I don't have very many, not a big long remarks other than to let everybody know that we had a breakfast this morning for our teams that were veterans, and today is Veterans Day, of course. So want to thank all of the veterans in the room for their service and appreciate all that they contribute to making us safe and creating a great place that we live. So with that, we'll go directly to the approval of the minutes on the meetings that we had on September 24th and October 3rd. They're in your package.
Motion.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Perfect. Public comments. Do we have any public comments today? Doesn't look like it.
Nope.
Okay. So next item is commercial. We'll just go right to E1. Where is John? John.
This is just a change of control for a lease that we have with Houston Fuel Oil to SEM Group. Mm-hmm. It doesn't change anything in our lease. Doesn't change any of the terms. So we're just asking for a name change.
And understand it that their credit is improved as a result. Just of this.
Quite a bit.
Yeah, okay. SEM Group's merging into Energy Transfer.
Perfect. Is there a motion to approve E1?
Motion.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Perfect. Okay, finance. Mr. Finley, are you going to take us through the 2020 operating capital budget?
Do we want to do the other ones first and get...
We could do that if you want. Okay, let's go ahead and skip that one for now. And we'll go to G, item one. Rich, you going to go through that? Is Rich going to go through that? Here we go. Go ahead.
Okay.
Thanks.
Morning. We have one item on the agenda this morning. It has to do with two contracts. It's one item, but it's a big one. As you all know, we are progressing the design and construction of the Houston Ship Channel widening and deepening project as fast as possible. One of the steps along that way, along that, is to make sure the design is as complete as possible by the time we get the project authorized through the congressional WERDA, which would be next fall or so. The design process was initiated about 2 months ago with a $5.5 million approval by the Port Commission to start geotech and survey work. The next step is the technical analysis. That's being awarded or suggested to be awarded in this item to two companies in the items shown there in the text. To give you some background, I'm going to ask Lori Brownell, our director for channel improvement, to come up and provide a little bit more technical detail on what these contracts entail.
Rich, before you do that, would you talk a little bit about where we are with the MOU with the Corps? Because the idea is we're front loading these costs to be able to be in position to start the work sooner. Correct?
Yes.
And so walk through, and we need to have you were working on the MOU with the Corps. So where are we on that?
Yeah, we've gone back and forth with the Corps in terms of what exactly the enabling legislation is that would allow us to make this agreement. Last week we had a Tier 1 meeting where we met with the district staff from Galveston, the colonel, the commander of Galveston, the general, the commander of the division, as well as chief of planning, who was on the phone. And we clarified the instrument, which is called Section 221. So right now we are handing the paperwork back and forth to make sure we get, you know, all the I's dotted and the T's crossed with legal in the core. Essentially, and that should be signed. Is Charlie in the room?
Yeah, we should have the agreement in about a week and then close. But most importantly, the Corps has written us that the work we award is able to go back prior to the date of the agreement and still qualify. So it's not any more critical path with that change.
Great.
And that's one agreement in a series of agreements that we need to make, which the rest of them are outlined on one of the slides that we'll show you in a few minutes.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Okay.
I have one question. You've got two engineering companies doing one phase of it, right?
$8 million. What phase would they be doing? What port will they be doing for their $8 million?
So there's two companies, or actually there's three companies, because one of the awardees is a joint venture between Gehagan and Bryan and AECOM. The other company is HDR. So we've allocated the work according to we're matching up the tasks with the skills and who we thought was most appropriate to conduct those tasks. So in simple terms, we've given one of the companies really all the responsibility for the design and technical analysis for segments 1 and 2, and the other company segments 3 and 4. It's a little bit more complicated than that. There's some overlapping issues, but we can give you a little bit of detail in one of the slides, which outlines exactly what tasks go to what company.
3 and 4 is just a bigger phase of it.
Yeah, are you looking at the numbers? Why one is $8 million and one is 13 million? Yeah, the company that got $8 million also has the $5.5 million that we awarded 2 months ago. So it's not that we're trying to aim at a 50-50 split. We're really trying to balance the work across both so we can get it done as fast as possible. And then also, like I said, allocate the tasks that have to be done to the company that's best situated to do that. Some are have stronger skills in ship simulation, others have stronger skills in levee design and so forth.
By splitting it, we'll be able to get the results a lot better.
A lot faster.
Faster.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Great. Lori?
So good morning. Again, my name is Lori Brownell. I want to just give you a brief update of where we've been, where we are, and what we can do to accelerate these contracts and the design and construction moving forward. So the port is a non-federal sponsor for the Army Corps feasibility study. It was a four-year effort. It is nearing completion. We're wrapping up the final comment period by mid-November, which will go to Army Corps headquarters in mid-December. And there's a whole process of reviews by state and federal agencies, and we don't expect completion of that until April 2020. As part of the feasibility report, the port had to submit three letters of they're kind of itemized up there, the letter of intent, basically, that we support the feasibility report and the contents in it, the design design aspects of it, the financial capability, basically, that we are financially secure to provide our portion of the percentage captured within the feasibility report, and then the real estate acquisition capability, basically, that we can provide any necessary dredge material management area properties should they be needed. So again, our main goal and aim is to get this congressionally approved by WERDA in the September of 2020, and our goal is to start construction in 2021. This is 3 years in advance of the current core schedule that they don't expect to start until 2024. So those design contracts are for your approval today. And the parallel path to advance the design and construction is kind of summarized here. In small font, I apologize. But basically, the first row is the necessary steps to get the feasibility report approved through WERDA, again in September 2020. And the timelines for the reviews are all up there. But basically, today is the end of the feasibility report. By mid-December, it goes up to headquarters. And then state and agency review will kind of come to the head in April 2020. There are a series of agreements, work in kind, the design review, and the construction agreement and private partnership agreement that all need to be worked through and approved with our partner in this, the Army Corps, to make sure we're doing the designs in accord and that they will review it step by step with us and make sure when we come to the end in early 2021 that everyone's in agreement. So they'll be heavily involved. They're not excused from the design effort at all, but we'll be working them as partners through the next year. So again, Rich kind of summarized it. In last September, we gave a $5.5 million award to the joint venture team, which again is Gehagan and Bryan and AECOM for the in-water geotech and survey work. Today, we're considering the award of two separate design contracts totaling $22 million for those two design teams. And of course, our advocacy continues on through the approval of WERDA and outreach of our stakeholders with the funding agreements and all that, making sure we can pay for this as we move forward. So I can't emphasize this enough, is that all work will be done in accord with Army Corps engineering regulation and guidelines. They will have plenty of opportunity to review at all critical junctures, which we've defined as 35, 65, 95, and final. Our main acceleration focus is segments 1 through 4, which I'll describe on the next slide. And along with the aspects of the design may mainly include widening the bay area. The upper reaches are widening and deepening with upland placement areas in the bay, and of course engineering through final design. So the port-led aspects are through basically 1 through 4, which are kind of summarized there on the right. Basically, Bolivar Reach all the way to the end of segment 4 there, which is right near Beltway 8. The Army Corps-led aspects are the, you know, near where we are today. Those aren't expected by the normal Corps process to even start until 2024. So again, we're getting a 3-year look ahead or design or upfront aspect of that, which by the Corps-led process, again, they're not going to start to 2024. And with the process that we have in place now and proposed in front of you today, we'll get a 3-year advance look. So the ones indicated and in bold are the proposed segments for improvement, which basically segment 1A, B, and C will widen to 700 feet with relocation of the barge lanes. Segment 2, which is the Bayport Ship Channel, will widen that to 455 feet. Segments 3 and 4, there's different widening and deepening aspects of that, along with the construction of the Bayport, Barbarous Cut Flare and the Turning Basin. And then segments 5 and 6, again, are for the, slated for the Army Corps-led aspects. So what's under consideration today is the two contracts for the Hagen and Bryant AECOM, which is the joint venture team, and HDR. They both have similar technical roles with project management, stakeholder engagement, the geotech aspects, and the design and engineering. Like Rich said, the JV team will be focusing on segments 1A, B, C, and 2, which is that bay area and the Bayport Ship Channel. And the kind of individual scopes are listed there, but they're also doing the ship simulation with WST and some engineering work associated with the geotech for the water work that was awarded in September. HDR is totaling 13.2, JV is 8.8, and there's some subs are listed there at the bottom. But HDR is focusing on segments 3 and 4 with all of the kind of bulkhead design and ship sloping simulation and the public outreach along with the AETON coordination and cultural resources. So the scopes that are in front of you provide a lot more detail, but they both have a large contingency of subs that are kind of summarized at the bottom. For the JV team, it's HVJ and waterway simulation technology, which again, there's ship simulation. And for HDR, that's all the upland necessary work that's required for the upland geotech and the survey work. And then Holloway is the public outreach with Fugro doing the survey. And then Recon is for cultural resources. And so in summary, the total for they're both contracts and under consideration is about $22 million. That's all I have.
Questions? Okay, if there are no other questions, we'll take a motion for G1.
I'll move.
I'll move.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. let's move from to H1.
Can I say one thing?
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Lori, how long have you been here now? 2 months?
9 weeks.
And she done an excellent job, along with, you know, her group, Richard and David and Charlie's assistants there. This was a lot of work, along with the contractors. This was a lot of work, mm-hmm. to get this together, and it's a big project, a necessary project. So anyway, welcome aboard. We kind of threw the fire hose at you, but she comes with a lot of experience, and thank you, Lori.
Thank you.
So I would like to ask a quick question. So on page 3, the schedule, that's like a best case scenario, I guess, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Well, the schedule for
on the federal and U.S.
Well, let me just point out, Rich mentioned that we had a tier one meeting, which with the Corps last week, with the general from the division and the colonel from the district. We're solidly aligned that a chief's report has to be signed by April 29th. That is the absolute goal. We need it. We've advised everyone in Congress and in those committees that this is going to be our date. We're going to have things in line to make sure that there's placeholders in here to make this work to get this thing authorized in 2020. That's the critical path. So I'm saying it's more best case. This has to happen.
Yeah, more than best case, yeah.
Okay. Right. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg.
As much as we can make Congress.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. So that's the wild part.
But we got to do our part to be ready for that.
So I have a little water.
Jeff,
go ahead.
Do you want to do the tariff one?
Put this back.
You want to do a tariff now?
Good thing for you. And you want to wait?
Yeah.
Let's go ahead. Go ahead.
Good morning, Chairman and Commissioners. We have one item on the operations agenda this morning, and it's for a general rate increase across the board equal to CPI for the previous 12 months prior to July of this year for all three tariffs, including both container terminals and the general cargo facilities. You might recall last month we discussed bringing this forward this month. It gives the users an opportunity that we spoke publicly about it to see if there were any feedback for this body, and I'm not aware of any. So I'll take the questions.
Commissioners, any questions?
Jeff, how will this compare to other
areas? I'm sorry.
How will this compare to other areas' rate increase?
You know, those things are not as public as we are, so I really can't speak to that. I did want to note, I failed to mention that Marcus's harbor fee is going up 3%, which is a little greater increase than the rest of the tariffs. And Marcus discussed that last month. I don't know if you have any questions of Marcus for this month.
Isn't this 1.8% contractually obligated? So we have a contract that says we can increase the tariff by that amount, but not more, correct?
Correct. For the container terminals, not the general cargo
facilities. Right, got it.
For okay. Contracts with the steamship line. So to answer your question loosely, you know, we're competitively priced. There's ports on the East Coast and West Coast that are priced a lot higher than what we are. There are others on the East Coast that are priced lower than what we are. We feel like that we're in that good spot to make sure that we're attracting the cargo, but also at the same time being able to, you know, to have the cash to continue to build new terminals and make the investments we need. Does that answer your question?
It does.
Any other questions? No, I'll take a motion.
Move approval.
Second?
Second.
Okay, all in favor say aye.
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 Okay, great. All right, we are not gonna have an executive session this meeting, so we'll go back to finance, and Mr. Finley, you're gonna take us through the 2020 operating capital plan and the 5-year plan, right?
Well, thank you. Good morning, Chairman and Commissioners. There's a hard copy document that was left at your feet, and I'll also try to keep up on the screen. Commissioner Branch, yeah. No, sir. It's that one on your right, Commissioner Meese. Yes, sir. That's it. Yep. All right, very good. A few reminders before we start. Here on page one, a reminder that all tax receipts from Harris County are not included in these operating capital budgets. The tax receipts are used exclusively for debt service, so none of that money is in here. As you know, any item of $50,000 and above will come back to the Port Commission during 2020, be that operating or capital. So you're approving the income statement, the capital plan in total, and then we bring each of those back. And then lastly, I'll reference 2019 and comparisons to that. That's effectively a mid-year update on 2019. We updated a bit from that, but it's effectively comparing where we'd like to end, where we see ourselves ending in 19, and rolling that in comparison to 2020. Page two, then, is what we'll talk about today. I'll ease into this a little bit with some words on a narrative overview of the whole thing, income statement, capital, headcount, et cetera. Then we'll talk specifically on the income statement, high level, and some numbers, cargoes. We'll dive into revenue expenses, headcount, capital, and liquidity. Then I'll pause and ask for questions, of course, and approval of the budget. And then we'll briefly touch on the five-year outlook before you today. That does not require action on your part. From a narrative perspective, page three, market expectations for next year vary. I would call it around 2 to 3%, depending on the source and what we're talking about. Global estimates from the Federal Reserve sources are around 3.5%, the U.S. just below 2%. State Comptroller's Office has published a number of around 3% growth expected next year for the state of Texas. They call that the gross state product, GSP. So our revenue is growing 7% to $425 million. As you would imagine, and we'll see in a minute, about 80% of those dollars are coming from the containers. And we'll talk about that more in a few minutes. Generating $185 million in operating cash flow, which would be up about 4% from where we expect to land this year. As I mentioned, container terminal is driving the bulk of that with 5% unit growth. And bulk of that, of course, coming, well, I should say, of course, bulk of that coming from export loads leaving us. This is a good thing. General cargo is showing really good growth for next year at 6% revenue growth. We'll talk about. We do see steel softening a bit. We've seen that the last 2 or 3 months with the double-digit drops in our import steel. Right now, through October, it's down about 6%. But that will, we think, continue into early next year. We have a very strong first half of 2019, but that has really fallen precipitously the last 3 or 4 months. So it still is about 4 million tons of steel next year, which is a good number for us. But it is noticeable in terms of the cargo outlook.
Is that due to the geopolitical climate or the slowing in the oil field?
Probably all the above. Rig count, I think, is kind of flat to softening a bit. Mm-hmm. Certainly new startup rig count is down. As you get towards the end of the year, of course, they're wanting to bleed off as much inventory as they can from mm-hmm. avoid taxes, et cetera. So I think it's all the above.
Okay.
Commissioner Driving.
Now, there was talk this last week of China and U.S. starting to soften the tariffs. Yeah. Just back away. So, I'm assuming that would positively affect our
I would think. John may know the exact number. I believe South Korea is a bigger provider of our import steel than China is today. But nonetheless, it should help us. Yep. Okay, middle of the page there, some spend notes as we look to invest in various employee programs, tools, and systems. Is driving increased spend next year. Community initiatives, there's a couple that will pop out of that, driving some increased spend. And then as we look to continuously improve, of course, the operation of the Port Authority, there's various improvement initiatives considered herein. Promotion and development investments increase about 6%, still spending around $6 million on various P&D expenditures, and that's growing next year as well. We'll talk about headcount growth, 25 new positions for 2020, a $232 million capital improvement plan, of course, focused primarily on the container terminals, around two-thirds of the capital. And then liquidity, we have sufficient liquidity to continue to award all of the projects that you will see from PHA's perspective, PHA's capital needs next year. And what we've done in this As we look in the 5-year, we've assumed the accelerated plan that Lori and Rich mentioned as well, with construction beginning sometime around 2021. So we put in a 50-50 scenario of the port shouldering 50% of that responsibility, 50% by industry. And then with that, then from an ability to fund perspective, we would need to issue some sort of debt instrument in order to fund our 50% share. So we baked in debt service in the liquidity going forward to show, again, very rough numbers. As you'll know, they'll change a million times before we begin to execute. But we have considered that in the 5-year outlook, and you'll see that in just a few minutes. Page 4, a very high-level look at the income statement for next year. You can see in the middle there, 2019, where we think we will land for this year, just under $400 million in operating revenue. Through October, we're up about 7%, not quite the 8%. We've seen a little bit of softening in the export boxes out of the container terminals. The cash is cash generation, you can see at $178 million for this year. It's coming a little bit light of that. Some of you may remember we made an investment in the pension plan this year to offset dropping that discount factor. So that's about $4 million that came off of that number. But otherwise, 2019 is tracking as expected. So moving to the right there for 2020, $425 million of revenue. That's a growth of 7%. Generating $185 million of operating cash flow. In other words, that excludes all the non-operating things we can talk about. But the business itself would generate around $185 million or 4% growth. The $425 million, if achieved, is up about 45% over a 5-year period. And if you dial that back 10 years, we've doubled our revenue since 2010 if we achieve these numbers in 2020. So strong performance by staff for sure. Page 5 is a little more painful. Now you get the actual numbers across time with the income statement. I have circled a few of the concepts I want to bring to your attention. Clearly, gross margin is very important. That is the beginning, if you will, of the cash flow that will generate to fund continued growth and community programs and employee programs, etc. And you can see we've been fairly consistent around the 39% range, in gross margin through actuals and what we're projecting into 2020. As you look into the 5-year plan, the depreciation on all of this capital for us begins to catch up. So that will begin to dilute a little bit over time as we then backfill that capacity with growth from John and Jeff's team. Nonetheless, gross margins holding stable around 39%. G&A, 14% of revenue. Again, I've circled last year's budget and this year's budget. We let those dollars grow to $61 million. That's a little hot, I think. We won't achieve that. But from an affordability perspective, we can't afford 14% or $61 million. But it does represent growing those dollars a bit faster than revenue from a budget proposal perspective. Operating income, I've circled there at 25 points of operating margin, quite strong as we expect that to continue into next year. Then dropping to the bottom line again, lower right corner, you see the $183 million of total cash flow. It was 185 on the prior page, was just operations, and now you add in, again, some non-operating things, it pulls it down to 183. Continuing to earn around 40 cents of cash on every dollar of revenue, that's the 43 cent that you see there circled. Again, it will dilute a little in the 5-year plan, as you'll see, as we start to incur debt service and things associated with the deepening and widening project.
Tim, are we going to make our reforecasted number? Just eyeballing it doesn't look like we're.
Yeah, we're about $10 million behind in revenue from again the container, a little bit off. We're closer to our original budget than we are to reforecast, which is unusual. Actually, Jeff has been much more accurate than the spending side has been in the past. Yeah, sorry, Jeff. That was a compliment, by the way.
Oh, I thought you just threw him under the bus.
Yeah, no, I'll do that later.
You threw everybody else on.
And the rest of us, self-included, I threw under the bus. So revenue's a bit short, again, about $10 million through October. And cash flow, same principle. Again, if you add back in that additional funding we did for the pension plan, we're within 1% to 2% of cash flow. So big picture, we're close, but it'll be a little bit light.
And you're saying our revenue decrease is based on a reduction in export?
That's what we're saying, yes. Again, the reduction versus the expectation. It's still a 9%, 8%, 9% growth in boxes. It's just we had dialed it up a little bit with the reforecast, but the export-loaded boxes have been missing the last couple of months.
Okay.
A little bit softer.
Tim, if I can.
Yeah, please.
1 second. Those exports are still strong.
Yeah.
It's not as strong as we had predicted.
Exactly.
They've been over 15% those last 3 months, but we predicted higher since the reforecast. And we're spot on with where we started to get with the budget. So if we'd have left it alone, we'd have been perfect.
Sorry, I brought it up. Yeah, Jeff's right. The trajectory is fantastic. Exports are still up double digits. It's just we thought it was going to continue, and it has softened just a bit.
But okay.
Again, it's relative.
But let me ask you something, Tim.
Sir.
But that could have been because of the plants wasn't able to get the resin out as fast as they thought they could.
That's right.
So actually, their projections was
they sure
way
are. Anecdotally, there's words around some slowdown in the feedstocks into those facilities that could be causing that. So,
but now it's beginning to really take off, right?
Yeah, the resins are up.
Yeah,
right. Unbelievably.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So don't give Jeff all the credit.
Yeah. Sorry, Jeff.
Or the Greek.
Maybe next year. We'll get them next year. All right. Looking at page six, as we look a little bit at cargoes, you see total containers. These are the container terminals themselves. Again, 5% growth. Export loads in this plan, the export loads are up 8%. And import loads up 1%. I believe we have a couple of new services coming online here this year, which should continue to push that import load number up.
Yes.
And balancing is, as you would think, the import empties, which we need for export loads, the import empties are up about 9% as well, just to feed that export load. So that balancing is working fine.
Good.
On the right side of this, you see steel, again, projecting a 10% decrease next year. Very visible commodity from a financial perspective. It doesn't have a tremendous impact on the plan. Again, through October, we're down about 6%, but these last 3 or 4 months have been down from 20 to 40% each month, so it really has fallen off quite steeply. Page seven, finish out the cargoes. Top left are autos, both Bayport and the Turning Basin autos. These are just illustrating organic growth, if you will, from Bayport. That's the signal we have from the tenant at the auto terminal. Turning Basin here at Volkswagen seems to be recovering a bit, so nice growth from an auto perspective.
On the Bayport auto, where is he on? I mean, they were projecting that they were going to get several more lines. How many cars are we bringing through? How many per ships are we getting in there per month?
I don't recall the number. You remember the number, Jeff?
You know, I think we're up around 8,000 this year, and they're committed to do somewhere around 10,000. They're probably going to be a little short. They have not added any new business to existing business.
And they're dependent on FCA, which has had some corporate
still
changes.
Still the Fiat Chrysler trade. It's looking good, but we're not seeing some huge growth.
Well, and they're about to merge. A merger was announced, so that may have an impact on their volumes. I mean, hopefully a good one, but you don't really know.
Other general cargoes on the right side of the page. Again, a favorable story here for general cargoes with 6% growth looking at next year. Several new tenants and other new volume commitments coming in. You see parenthetically down below, cement. You're aware of the CESCO arrangement that's ramping up, Project Cargo with UAL, Grains, Hanson Mueller, et cetera. So great to see a good growth number look out for next year for General Cargos. Page 8 then, we bridge revenues, operating revenues from 2019 to 2020. And again, as I mentioned, the bulk of that coming from the container business, about 80% of the growth in dollars coming from containers. Channel development, this is really getting that submerged land program up and running, so up another $2 million next year. So great work there by the channel development team. And then, as I mentioned, turning basin revenues up about $3 million. That's both lease revenues and some of those cargoes represent revenue tonnage as well. So good growth for the business next year, largely containers, but we're seeing it really across the board. The pie chart is looking at all inflows now. You're looking at total revenues of $437 million. So this is all incoming revenue streams and split in pie chart fashion. Containers clearly remaining the lead dog here at 77%. It's actually down a pinch because of good growth in turning basin and submerged lands, et cetera. But nonetheless, about $337 million of container revenue. Turning basin revenues, $57 million, again, growing 5%. You see the lease there down 7%. That is largely moving some submerged land leases into channel development. So it's a little bit of a false signal there. And then all other growing nicely. So that's just a split, and the words below confirm some of the things that we've already spoken through. Looking at expenses on page 10, operating and G&A expenses combined, we'll spend around $293 million this year, and those expenses growing to $321 next year. So about $28 million increase in spend. The bulk of that, it's a little bit difficult to follow the bouncing ball, but you see PHA and ILA salaries and benefits, roughly $4 million of that is ILA associated with the volume growth. And then drop down to G&A, there's PHA salary and benefits again, and the incentive program. So you add all those things up, you're looking at $15 million in employee reward programs and ILA salaries. The bulk of the change in PHA is driven by headcount. We currently have about 25 heads open today. Four of those you approved last year, we haven't executed, and then 21 that are backfills, replacement recs for attrition or retirements, what have you. And then we have 25 heads that we are seeking your approval for in 2020. So that's the bulk of that. We also have the merit program, performance, pay for performance program considered in here, driving a bit of an increase. And you see the one-liner for PHA incentive program, a new program we will put in place by the end of the year. By statute, it needs to be published how we're going to incentivize and reward the employees. And then in 2020, we will record those expenses and pay that out towards the end of the year or the first part of 21. So a lot of investment this year. It's a bit of a bubble as we get a lot of these things in place and then should smooth back out in the coming years. Back to the bridge, depreciation and amortization, again, reflecting the capacity that we've put in place, including some maintenance dredge, wharf maintenance of a couple million dollars, consulting fees down there for $3 million. There's a host of projects in here. The big ones are the next generation ERP. ERP is enterprise resource planning. The next big IT platform that we need to begin planning for. So we have some monies in next year's budget to begin that planning exercise. Environmental projects represent around $800,000 that Trey is leading us through. And then cybersecurity that Charles also is keeping us safe and secure from an information perspective with regards to protocols and end user device management, et cetera. So good investments there and necessary to protect and grow the business. The other expense line for $1 million is largely, if not entirely, a placeholder for the executive office building renovation. As we continue to figure out that plan and what we're going to do, we wanted something in this budget to represent if we move forward with the renovation.
What's our timetable on coming up with a solution on the office situation?
We have narrowed some alternatives down, which we now are taking back to the architect to help us make that decision. So hopefully in the next couple of months, we'll bring you what we plan on, what we hope to do.
Did we look at or even consider building another building?
Yep, that's part of what we're doing right now.
Yeah. Different location.
Well, you could build another building right here.
Yeah.
In the parking lot.
It may be going somewhere else because part of this is in the foreign trade zone that we're losing the ability to use it. So we're looking at different sites. This is still one of the sites and still something we're looking at, but we also are looking at other alternatives.
Okay. Well, I would like for us to, I'm sorry.
No, you go ahead. Go ahead.
I just want to make sure that we're building in capacity, because I'm getting the feeling that we're pretty much full in this building.
Yep.
And one of the things that really, in my observation, cripples a lot of government entities, they don't do very well at planning for the future, building in capacity when they build facilities. So I really hope that we're looking at building, adding capacity that we don't need today, but we're going to need over the next several years.
Well, even the renovation we were going to do in this building was increasing capacity, yeah, how it was going to be done. So we definitely are looking at future growth. Yeah.
Yeah. Are we considering this entrance in and out of this place for customers and others to get in into this building with the 6th freeway, which is never going to change, I don't see, in the near future? Does it make sense to get away from that?
Well, I think just consider if, you know, if you are going to build another building, where it goes,
yeah,
not having the restricted access,
right,
and that type of stuff. I think all of that's on the table.
Good.
Okay. Very good. Page 11 does a similar mix at all expenses. In pie chart fashion, clearly salaries and benefits, including labor, representing 50% of that spend. The next large category being depreciation, you see that on the left, around $80 million, 24% of our spend on being a very capital-intensive industry, of course. Discretionary, made up of obviously a host of things, fees and services, consulting, software licenses, etc. Growing 12%, growing about 16%. Some of that's the projects I referenced earlier, driving that spend. Page 12 gives a view of the headcount that I referenced. You see in the middle bar there, 679 is where we were as of September 30th, with, as I mentioned, 25 open headcount positions. For a total of 704 ending this year. I don't know that we'll get there, but 704. Again, 25 represents 4 new that we're still pursuing, and then 21 replacements. So we're asking for 25 new heads. You see in the lower box, it breaks that down just a bit. 19 of those in operations. With Jeff and Paulo have 16 of those in maintenance, primarily in a couple of ops headcounts. 3 for Marcus, a couple in fire, I believe, and then 1 radio tech, Marcus, I think. 6 in G&A, those are in infrastructure, 2 in IT, and 1 in legal. For Mr. Erickson, that would be the 25.
Records. Records person.
I didn't want to say that.
Mr. Don Carlos gave me the evil eye. I just wanted to make sure that we clarified.
It wasn't my place.
Is there a rule about no more lawyers?
Yeah. Like competition.
That would take us to 729. All right. Capital, $232 million plan for next year. We should finish this year in 2019 roughly around our budget number of $280 million. You'll see that on the next chart. We had some puts and takes, but good execution by Rich and and Jeff and the other teams here from a forecast accuracy perspective. The 232, you can break into four recognizable categories there. You see strategic projects of 112. That is almost entirely Bayport from Continuing Yard 2 South and the Cranes. Strengthening Wharves 4 and 5 as we look to move bigger. The Cranes incoming already, but put those on those wharves to service the larger vessels. We have a Port Road contribution in there, as well as some land purchases for Bayport South to pursue commercial development opportunities there at Bayport. So that's all in that $112 million.
So the container yard that we broke ground on to store containers, that was, is that a joint venture? Is that a public-private? Are we doing that?
No, sir. All those are.
Or is that ours? Funded.
Just the last one we did?
Yeah,
the last one. Terminal 7 is ours.
Probably 7. Yeah, that's ours.
That's ours.
Okay.
We've done some joint ventures on empty yards in the past that are already built with like CMA or TLT.
Yeah.
And then there's one.
This was for
joint ventures other than they lease the land from us and they spend their money on it.
Okay. This was the one where we did the empty yard.
It's probably the TLT.
We have two of those.
We have the ground lease, and they make the investment in the infrastructure.
Okay.
Yep. Thank you. Recapitalization 81. This is split pretty much between Barber's Cut, BCT, and Turning Basin. Additional yard capacity at Barber's Cut. We have money for a new maintenance facility at Barber's Cut as well, as we need to move that off to the east to make room for some revenue producing container yards there at Barber's Cut. We have in this Manchester 2 rebuild, City Dock 9 rehabilitation, and other odds and ends for general cargoes to continue to invest up in this important area. General projects at $29 million, the largest element within that is preparing the Beltway 8 placement area for materials that would be sourced or provided from the deepening and widening project. This would be removing bunkers and vegetation and all that and preparing it. In a number of years, we could continue to put placement area there and make it ready for commercial use. This will be the first step in that. So that's $9.5 million that's in that number. In addition to that, there's a number of cost shares that we have on placement areas with the Corps of Engineers, around $7 million as we share that cost to construct additional capacity in our existing placement areas. Remaining projects, 10, a large number of cats and dogs, maintenance equipment, gear, heavy equipment, technologies in there for around $3 million, et cetera. So that's a broad brush of the included capital improvement program. Go to page 14, a little more detail, a lot of numbers, forgive me. I'll try to call out what this is. A reminder, this liquidity is funds available for award. These are not cash balances. So when you see $89 million ending this year, that's funds available. Cash in the bank would be between $150 and $300 million. The cash pays out over the project life cycle, right? 18 months, 20 months, what have you. So funds available, end of period, are funds available for future award. Again, you see total cash flows coming in at $175 million for this year. The host of projects making up the 282, which was very close to our, I believe 287 was our approved number for 2019. And in 2020, there's your $232 million net uses. As you see the bottom line there, ending with around $41 million to award and $39 million in 2021. Now, the Houston Ship Channel project, what you have on that row in 2019 and 2020, so the 2019 number of 29.9, that comprehends the 5.5 that was approved a couple months ago. That was the September, the geotechnical GIS engineering work. And then this includes the item that you just approved, call it $24 million for design of the project. That is included up above. So that is being funded today by our own cash flow. And that's why I have initially in parentheses down there, because ultimately we'd like to put this back into the 50-50 share pile and recover 50% of that. The 2020, the $9.5 million, that's the Beltway 8 site prep that I referenced a minute ago. So again, that is being done as a result of the Ship Channel project. And so it is being funded by our cash today, but I'd like to come back to it. The 283.3, what we've done, it'll be more easy to see in the five-year plan, but we've, to illustrate and or acknowledge the project and our responsibility, we've put 50% of this capital requirement on the Port Authority. So 283 here, about $140 million in 2023 associated with the accelerated plan. Now, as you can't see what's baked into the numbers, but we've assumed that in 2021, you know, we'll begin to issue debt instruments to pay for our portion of that. So there's debt service that's actually taken out of that cash flow that you see in 2021. Again, actual results will vary. We'll continue to refine that as we get, you know, new estimates from the Corps, as we understand, you know, the financing arrangements with industry and on our own side. But that's what it looks like for the next 2 years.
What this shows is that you have capacity to fund the 50% portion out of either debt financings or current cash flow.
Yes, that's right. And again, we wouldn't issue 283 if it were to fall out like this. We wouldn't issue all 283 in 21. We would actually issue that in tranches as each year those contracts need to be funded. It's to get it represented.
So, Tim, where did I miss? Where did we lose $40 million between the thick one and the thin one on funds available beginning of period?
We moved it up into here. Before, it was outside the Houston Ship Channel. We kept out, but we're going to fund that with our cash, so we move that back in to okay. the PHA.
So this is now included in here.
Yes, sir. That's okay. Right. That's right. Thank you for noticing. Okay, so with that, I will pause, answer any questions, comments. And if not, would appreciate a recommendation for approval.
So we're anticipating a 50% of that money coming back to us.
This is just our 50% share.
Our 50% share.
283 sitting on industry somewhere.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And so, no, then I will fund this. We will fund this with our cash flow, the debt service, as we issue those bonds to pay our share of it.
Right. Okay.
So we're thinking about paying the whole thing, our 50%, carrying it out of our revenues.
Correct. That's what this budget assumes.
Long run, that saves all the interest you'd be paying on those bonds.
It's a very good point. I mean, as we get into the time frame, we'll be making trade-off decisions on our own assets. Do we equipment lease these cranes versus use cash? You know, so we'll be finding the lowest cost
balancing
financing.
But Commissioner Meese, we still will probably, if we have a large contract in a year, we may have to issue debt and then pay the debt subsequently. So we won't necessarily be saving all the interest expense.
That's right.
We're going to have to.
I think the key decision point at that point would be how do you issue?
That's right.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Revenue bonds are cheaper than not. Yeah, it just depends on what the lowest cost of issuance is, and then I think also the decision about whether you fund it all at once or over a period of time will be based on sort of where we think the capital markets will be in the future too.
Sure.
Because if
right.
you under this scenario, we're assuming no recession between now and 2021. And I think you have a reasonable expectation of interest rates rising in that debt service number, right?
Yes, we do.
Yep. And so we'll have to balance all that out once we get closer to that
yep.
time frame.
Yep. Yep.
Just a quick observation on the open positions. We still don't have a chief government public relations officer.
We
that has been vacant for a very long time.
Well, it was not. It was just reinstituted, and we just started that search here within the last month.
I thought it'd been open. I thought you'd been looking long.
It was open, and it was closed, and it was open again.
Yeah. I lost track of the closing.
Yeah. We redefined that position.
Yeah.
You know, that was a couple of years
yeah.
ago, and we
yeah.
redefined
yeah.
that position.
That was a previous search for a somewhat different position.
Yeah.
That was closed, and then Roger announced, what, in June, I think. July, something like that.
July or September even.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there a motion or other questions?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Thank you. We'll talk very briefly about the 5-year plan. This is certainly a blend of art and science. Go to page 15 in your deck.
One question. Sorry, before we move. So have we totally ruled out geo bonds?
Nope.
Okay.
No, everything's on the table. I think it'll just be a function when we get to the place where we decide, when we're making that decision as to how to finance.
Yeah.
We'll put everything on the table and figure out what the best way to do it is, and then also understand the political will on geo bonds, but they're not off the table now.
Yeah, because we do have some constraints, i.e. elections.
Oh, there's no question.
Next year that we have to take into consideration, mm-hmm. if we're going to go in that direction. So
there's a lot of permutations on what you can do and how you can do it. And I think we just need to get through our, there are two big things. One is WERDA, right? Getting all that stuff done. The next part of it would be also how the other 50% is going to be funded, right?
Yeah.
So we need to make sure the industry side of the equation is nailed down while they are consistent in terms of every meeting we have with the politician, the coalition or the industry groups say that they're going to contribute. The question is how and what does that look like, and then how do we monetize that at the most efficient way?
Right.
And so I think once you that we need to have before we decide whether this is a geo bond or whether it's a revenue bond or whether it's a sort of a hybrid geo bond with the port guarantee and the cash flow to the county so they don't have to raise taxes. And there's a lot of ways to do that. But I think the key is making sure we get the hurdles that we have right now dealt with, and then we can have those decisions. But those are going to be 2020-ish, end of 2020 decisions, early 21 decisions.
Any kind of update at all on the other side as to whether how they're going to go about it, or are they going to do it, what position they're going to take?
They continue to be consistent and say they're going to do it.
Okay.
We've had multiple meetings with different politicians and what have you, and they are consistent in that. The question ultimately is how, and we're debating that now. I think part of the issue, or part of the information that they needed, had to do with the pilots doing their simulations and coming up with information about how many more daylight hours they're going to have, what kind of new rules they're going to have relative to the existing channel. And so and I understand that simulation has happened, and this week they're going to release the new rules could be in a 700-foot channel. I think they're meeting on the Thursday with the Big Ten to talk about what those are. So what that means then is the industry can then calculate the benefit of a wider and deeper channel to them, and then that will allow us then to have a broader, more detailed discussion about how the payments are going to get made.
So there's a lot of meetings going on. I mean, yes. There's different ideas, a lot of work on their side that they're doing. There's a lot of work that we've been doing on our side to try to figure this out. But it's just the question is how they're going
to
do it.
As I understand it, we have to engineer the entire project before we get to do any one of the projects. Is that right?
We are not engineering two segments of this right now, but I don't, the have to or choose to, I think is the way we're looking at it.
If you want to stay on an accelerated schedule, it's a have to. If you want the old schedule, then you wouldn't have to do that now. That's why we are taking, the risk that of the design. I mean, we've approved what 22 today and 5 before. So we're talking $27-28 million worth of risk. And the risk is that WERDA doesn't happen in 2020. We have a design that's approved by the Corps of Engineers, and because they're a partner in the design process. So we'll have sort of like if you're building a house, you got your plans ready, but you need your permit. And ultimately that permit comes as a result of the chief's report and then WERDA. And once you have that, then the question is, you'll at least be well in advance and have your plans for the improvement of the channel ready to go. Now, if WERDA slips a year, we'll have the plans done way in advance of WERDA. It just depends on what happens next year politically, right? And we're told that by both Democrats and Republicans on the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee, that it is in fact a bipartisan committee, and that they plan on having WERDA in 2020. I think they had they passed the Harbor Maintenance Trust Fund deal here maybe a month ago, and that was sort of a test WERDA case to see if they could actually get the committee to work together, as opposed to, you know, sort of the acrimonious thing that's going on in Washington right now. And they passed that, which was good. So at least that worked out pretty good. So ultimately, it is about getting WERDA done. But the fundamental issue is we want it, and I think that's why we're taking this risk today, right? We're just spending this money up front so that we have the plans ready to go, or at least all the engineering and everything ready to go when we do get the final approval from WERDA and then funding. So I think next year is going to be really important in terms of funding, because at some point, assuming that WERDA gets done, we will have to show the Corps where the money's coming from in order to start. And that'll be important to have all the coalition, the industry coalition together, along with our plans as well.
But regardless, whenever WERDA gets, when the authorization comes out, you want the design ready to go. So even if it slips, you still have to have it ready and be ready to go once you get the authorization.
Right.
Okay, a few slides and I will stop. Page 15 is an overview of the five-year plan. We'll just talk about a couple of concepts on here. Gray bar is the revenue outlook, so that represents an average 5% compound annual growth across that. You see, it should be in the back of that, Commissioner. There you go, getting to 15. Yep. The interesting thing, in 2023, you see a 6% revenue growth. Sometime out there in 22 or 23, I think we've judged it to 23, there'd be another round of polyethylene capacity put in place. I believe it's 22, but we've pushed the expectation out to 23. So the ability to generate additional export resins is on the horizon out there. And then we'll just look at the cash numbers. This is total cash flow, so it includes debt service. Should we, again, elect to issue debt, align with those numbers that we talked about earlier. So very, very, very round numbers and placeholders. 21 has about $10 million of debt service, growing to around $20 million in 22, and then $30 million in each year of 23 and 24. This is, to Chairman's point, that this is illustrating that we can accomplish our own CIP funding and have the room to fund a bit of debt service as well for a 50% share. Now, if that were 100, then it would be a different mathematical game. But be it 50% of the responsibility, it appears affordable at this level. P&L, I won't spend much time on page 16, same revenue. About mid-page there, non-operating revenue and expense, that's where you'll notice the brackets mean expense. That's where you'll notice the interest expense, the debt service payments exiting our cash flow through this five-year horizon. We'll drop down to the total cash flow line and dollars per revenue. You can see now we're getting down. It's still above 40 cents, but you can see it begins to dilute a bit, again, because of funding that debt service, but still nonetheless a respectable number. Very quickly on page 17, it's a little busy, forgive me. I'm not an artist. I play one on TV. So 2020 budget, you see again, the blue is our CIP with remaining dollars available for award. 21, then here comes our first $283 million responsibility, 50% share, et cetera, et cetera. You can see that responsibility, and then still ending with $39 million in funds available to award. Nothing in 2022 in this scenario. Of course, again, it will smooth out. And then 2023, the remaining $140 million. So we wanted to just have it represented. A couple of points here. Again, the words in the middle bullet, these are awards of future, dollars available for award of future projects, not cash balances. I will remind you, today we have a $100 million line of credit in place as sort of a backstop to award against. Should we need that, we could expand that if that is part of our decision criteria in the coming years. And then again, our own projects and the timing and prioritization will change a number of times in the coming years and months as we align that. So there's work we can do to smooth that out. You got to have capacity in place at the right time, but nonetheless, we can smooth those blue lines out. So I just wanted to illustrate what that 5-year looks like.
What this also shows is we have $600 million of additional capital expenses that we're spending at the same time.
That's right.
That doesn't include the ship channel, right? So the point of that is that if times get tough or if things are, we can always decide not to spend that $600 million or defer it or change it or something like that. And ultimately, we have to reinvest in our facilities to make sure that we can continue to build capacity and all that. But you have, I think what this shows is pretty good flexibility from a cash flow perspective, even with the channel improvements.
And that's it.
And you know, there's one thing I want to say. You know, mentioned is this rolling 5-year capital plan. I mean, you go back 5 years ago when we did this, and our group, our team has done a tremendous job. 5 years ago, we anticipated this year that we were going to handle 2.5 million TEUs, and we're going to bump up against 3 this year. So that, you know, it's so dynamic from year to year, and making these forecasts. We've done very well. For instance, hypothetically, which it's really not hypothetically, we heard there's another company moving in, doing business, that's going to do business. One company bringing business to Houston, another 80,000 TEUs a year by building a warehouse in here. You know, that's a 2.5-3% growth over today's volume that's going to start in a year and a half from now. So we've done a great job of staying ahead of that demand and having the infrastructure to handle the demand. So I would be willing to bet whatever we're projecting 5 years from now is not going to be right. But, you know, it's certainly the basis to go from, so we can, from year to year, change and adjust to make sure that we have the investments and making the right investments to handle the volume. So Tim and Tom and, you know, everybody, all the chiefs do a great job in staying ahead of this, and I appreciate what they're doing.
Before I yield the floor, just to recognize the team that does the actual work, I'm just the pitch man. Alex Skinner Clay and Katrina Stewart and David Dupree, they do the real work. Thank you very much. All right, that's all I have.
She has the big budget.
She does. She's got a big book. She knows that big book, thankfully.
I just want to echo what Roger said. This is when I first started thinking about joining the port, one of the things I did was look at the finance, because one of the biggest issues you have in any government agency is money and funds. And as they say in nonprofit world, no mission, no money, no mission. And so the same thing in this kind of business. So I will say that the professionals that are here from the top with Roger and all of the chiefs have done a great job. The obviously the commissioners have been here a long time and I'm new, so y'all have done a great job of positioning the port over the years to create a lot of value for the region. And the idea that you can spend that you have capital that will include the deepening and widening and another $600 million of investments over the next 5 years ensures that we'll be able to create more jobs, move more cargo, and create more value for everybody here. And it's an amazing group, and it takes a village. It's not just one person. Obviously, it's every team member here. I say this at Camden a lot, and I really believe this, and that is each person is really critical because they wouldn't be here if they weren't. And to me, it's all about getting the team very focused and understanding how much value they create and how much you know, good they do in the community, because it is about jobs ultimately, and making sure that people have jobs, and that we can continue to grow jobs so that people can take care of their families and do what they need fundamentally. So it's an amazing. I'm very honored to be part of this group, and I thank you for all that you've done in the past. Clearly, it's great history, and it's going to be even better as we build some of these additional projects and go forward. So, I don't think we have any voting on this item, but and it is a statutory requirement that we do it, but we don't have to approve it at this point. So, with that, we're not having an executive session, so we will, unless any commissioners want to make some comments.
Good work, Tim, you and your team.
Thanks, sir.
Great job.
Yes, sure.
We appreciate what y'all are doing.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
I didn't see any lottery money in there. We're not trying to play the lottery.
It's in the details.
Am I going to play the lottery? I didn't see anything. I think we do that every single day. We should be going to the channel. Yeah, there you go. There you go. Okay, great. I'll take a motion to adjourn the meeting.
So moved.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.